You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Share music and voices from genres and cultures around the world, reflecting you and the rest of your community. You make CJSF diverse.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. We at New Dimensions thank you for your support. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Our guest today has discovered that writing and other forms of expression can be especially effective in assisting our spiritual growth. He tells us it doesn't matter how good our expressions are, but that they keep us in relationship to the larger universe we are part of. Mark Nepo is a learner of the heart, not a specialist of the mind. His work, his writings, his many books, his poems, and his workshops are all about creating a sacred place where the experience of honest truth can happen. Even in our deepest moments of suffering, he encourages us to seek out slivers of light seeping through the broad slats of darkness. Today, we'll be exploring how art and creative expression can bring about our deepest truths to light. Mark Nepo is a poet and philosopher and a most eloquent spiritual teacher. In 2015, he was given a Life Achievement Award by Age Nation, and in 2016 was named by Watkins Mind, Body, Spirit as one of the most spiritually influential living people. He was part of Oprah Winfrey's The Life You Want tour in 2014. And has appeared several times on Oprah on her Super Soul Sunday program on OWN TV. As a cancer survivor, Mark devotes his writing and teaching to the journey of inner transformation and the life of relationship. He's the author of many audio learning projects, also upcoming in 2020 of 3 spiritual journeys for small groups. And some of his books include, which he has over 20 of them, Reduced to Joy, The One Life We're Given, Finding the Wisdom That Waits in Your Heart, The Way Under the Way, The Place of True Meeting, and Drinking from the River of Light, The Life of Expression. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. Welcome to New Dimensions. Mark, welcome to New Dimensions.
Oh, thank you. It's always good to be with you. Thank you.
It's always good to be with you. You know, I'd like to start today with a poem, and this is a poem that's right at the beginning of your book. Now, throughout all of your books, there are many poems, and many of them are written by you. So you, as a poet, it's wonderful to have your own poems. But this one I wanted to point out because for me, in the last month, I've never read this poem before. It's by William Stafford, and I've never read it before, but in the last month, it's come to me 4 times in different ways.
Wow.
And then when I opened your book, and it's right at the beginning of your book, I just have to share it with our listeners. Can you read it?
Yes, I'd love to. This is by William Stafford, the great poet from the Northwest, and it's called The Way It Is. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. But it is hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you can do will stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread.
You know, your teaching encourages us to discover that thread.
No, thank you.
Yes, definitely. And I want to tell our listeners, I've been immersed in your teaching for the last few days, and I have a few more days to go, which is just such a gift to be here with you at this retreat.
Oh, thank
at
you.
The Santa Sabina Center in San Rafael, California. And I just am so grateful, and I'm deepening myself. But I would like to ask you, when did this focus of following your thread and personal expression become a focus for you?
Well, so for me, and I can talk about that, let's give it a larger context, that William Stafford wonderfully talks about it as the thread, but it is the lifeline that all spiritual traditions speak about that connects the individual soul to the life force of the universe, whatever name we give to that, God, nature, quantum physics, the oversoul, Atman, Dharma, there's 1,000 names. But it's so all spiritual traditions, and love is the greatest thread, obviously. And for me, when it first appeared was when, so I'm 68, but as you know from my work, in my 30s, I almost died from a rare form of cancer, lymphoma. And I think that's where the notion of the thread long before I ran across William Stafford's poem, really appeared to me because, you know, as a poet, I was, you know, young and teaching and trying to get published and all those things. Well, when I was ill, forget publishing. The only gift I had was this rope of expression that I climbed day by day to get to tomorrow. And that became the first thread. And it was the way that my heart kept me connected in the midst of this horrible storm to everything that was foundational and lasting. So on the other side, blessed to be here, you know, I had become a student of all paths, and all of my work, you know, ever since, all of my books and my teaching, as you're experiencing with me, is all about how to affirm the common center of all paths and how to lift up the tools, the skills, the viewpoints, the perspectives, the threads that each offer us to live our lives, and how to help people discover what thread works for them.
You know, I know that in your recovery from your cancer, there was one point that you had an experience of perceiving in a different way. And you described this about when you, I think you had gone through some bone marrow transplants. Mm-hmm. They said that you needed to go home and lay down and not move.
Yes,
do
yes.
you recall
sure.
this?
Sure. Yeah, so they were actually, it wasn't a transplant, but it was a bone marrow sampling and a spinal tap, which I had in the same day, which I wouldn't recommend. but I didn't know anything. I just did what I was told. And so back then, I think it's much easier now, because they extract spinal fluid, it's the spinal tap, that you need to let that fluid regenerate, so you need to lie flat. Then it was like for 8 hours. I think it's much more reduced now. But if you don't, you get a migraine. So the lesson, be still. Well, being in my 30s and not wanting to be still, I would move and I'd get a headache. Be still, I'd lay down and I'd be fidgety and I'd get up, I'd get a headache. I was like, okay, do you get it? Be still. So finally, not through any wisdom, I just got exhausted of keep getting these headaches. I finally laid still on, which was the living room couch where I was living at the time, at that phase of life. And there was an apple tree in our front yard, which I'd seen hundreds of times, but never really seen until I was forced to lay still on the edge of life and death. And so I looked at this apple tree, and This is where I talk about in the book about the difference between mental perception and indigenous perception. Because my mental perception knew it was a tree. Oh, and I can identify it was an apple tree. And yes, apples fell from it and wind went through it. But I never related to the tree. And so there I was sitting and I saw the tree, and the tree started to speak to me, obviously not in words. And in this kind of message, if you will, or intuition, or this relational sense of the tree being alive, I got this sense that I translated into words, which said, when you get through this, no more making things up. You will bear witness to the miracle of things as they are. And of course, the chief thing I focused on was this message said, when you get through this, not if, which up until that point, I wasn't sure about anything. So I took that as a great affirmation. And that also changed so much how I approached writing, because it made me a witness to be present rather than looking for material to write, looking for stories to create that would be interesting or fascinating or have a point. It's told me I needed to be present enough until the miracle of life showed itself, and then simply record it.
And I know that there's, for me, I really have tried to aspire to be a better writer and to write with metaphors. And I've asked different writers about, oh, how did you get your metaphors? And, you know, I look up in synonym dictionaries and I just try and everything and nothing works. But you have a little piece in there. Then this is relating to seeing that apple tree.
Yes.
That you talk about how to find metaphors. So share the secret.
Well, it's not a secret, but it's a way of relating and seeing that I think even as a child, before I knew any of this, it was the way life has always spoken to me through metaphor. So even as a little boy, I remember being alone and trees, wind through trees. It's like they were saying, pay attention, pay attention. You see, what is this like? It's like what? What's it like? I just felt this kind of always, everything I would see, water going over stones in a brook. Pay attention. What is this like? What is this like? And so before I had any sense of, I didn't come into the word metaphor till I was in my teens or even later, early 20s. So it again is a point, is a portal of listening, of seeing, of letting the world speak to us, because metaphor at its heart is an image or a picture that helps us keep in view what's hard to keep in view. So we need to pay attention and look for it. Everything will show us its relationship to something else. And the great metaphysical poets in the Renaissance, in the early Elizabethan age, not Renaissance, actually, John Donne, you know, was one of the first. What it means to be metaphysical is that the assumption that everything in the universe is connected. And the poet's job, and I would say the spirit's job, is to discover how. Because when we discover those connections, each one is a teacher. And these connections turn out to be metaphors. So one of the things that's so powerful is the fact that, you know, as artists in the West, we're taught that we create out of nothing, which it couldn't be farther from the truth. That makes us feel this false, puffed up sense like we're playing God. Yeah, well, that's not true. That's not true. In fact, we are listening and discovering rather than inventing.
I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Mark Nepo, and he's the author of Drinking from the River of Light, The Life of Expression. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, Mark Nepo, N-E-P-O, marknepo.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. here with Mark Nepo, and he is the author of Drinking from the River of Light, The Life of Expression, as well as many, many, many other books. You're so prolific in poems and all that you do and offer to us. One of the metaphors that really grabbed me when you shared a story, and this book is filled with stories and poems and all sorts of things and metaphors, and this was when you were talking about a friend of yours, somebody in her family died, and how when somebody dies, somehow it reminded her of Hades,
yes.
The god Hades.
Yes.
And the word that you use and the image that came was about how the pull of the tangle affects everyone around you, and you say he might fist a set of roots and pull the tangle of roots deeper in the earth. It just blew my socks off, the image of that, like the devil pulling, fisting this.
Well, and it's a form, and so this was really Gail Warner, who is my friend, and we talked about this. She was the one who raised all of this. We entered this deep discussion, and she's the founder and director of Pine Manor Retreat Center in Southern California. And so what we were talking about and exploring, and what led me to that metaphor, is the fact that these energies, that when the grief, when someone dies, those who love, who's lost, we are pulled toward death with them. We don't leave life, but we are. That's what grief does. We are pulled, the net, the tangle of relationship, the kinship that we've spent a lifetime creating. Of course, this is what grief is. It makes sense when I could see it in a metaphor that we're pulled for a while by death toward the underworld, but we're still here. So we don't want to go, but we've got 1 foot here and 1 foot with them. And this is why I remember when my father was dying, you know, I felt like I was, for those months as he was close to death, I felt like I was half here and half there.
So when you describe it like that, it's not an intellectual process,
no.
Saying, okay, this is what you do when you're grieving. It's like you're giving us an experience.
Well, this is because, and this is the power of poetry, and the heart of poetry is metaphor. Metaphor and honesty. Metaphor immediately touches our heart. It doesn't go to the mind. It touches our heart and shows us what's unseeable briefly. And it gives us a way to understand it in a felt way. Like, oh, I understand that. If you were to pull the roots of a tree, the tree would start going a little bit underground, or the branches would lean. And that's what happens when we're grieving. Oh. But I wanted to say also about metaphor, and this is that, you know, I remember in one of my books in The Endless Practice, I was talking about metaphor, and I use it here, I explore it again, the fact that, you know, metaphor has its own agency. I mean, we don't create it or invent it. We discover it. So imagine, and this is a metaphor to talk about metaphor, but imagine when you go to you climb on the top of a mountain and you see the view. Well, when you leave, the view doesn't disappear. And metaphors are like that. If we make the climb, we will see them. They will come into view. But we have to make the effort and do the climb. And when we leave, they're not gone. They're there. They're teachers. So in one of the other book, you know, I had someone, a copy editor along the way, who I said the metaphor is seen. And they wanted to correct me and say, that's passive tense. No, it's that you see the metaphor. And I said, oh, no, no, no. No, 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 no. The metaphor is seen. The metaphor has its own agency. You know, when I did my book on inner courage, one of the ways into that was that I had discovered in Spanish, when you ask in Spanish, what does courage mean? Well, one of the ways it's translated in Spanish, that English phrase, is what does courage have to say?
Oh, there is very different from English.
Very different. Very different. Again, it's the in English, it's like, well, we decide what courage means, rather than, no, we need courage, so we seek its counsel.
Right. Beautiful. You know, all of this way of perceiving and all that you're writing, you say something about that, the bones of your work really harken back to your undergraduate work, I think. And you found a mentor who was Doc Palmer, I think.
Doc Palmer,
Who was a theater professor. Can you tell us why that's important to you?
Well, because back then, which, you know, was a little before the real burgeoning of creative writing programs. So I was an undergraduate, discovered I was a writer, a poet, hadn't written much yet, but I knew I was, and trying to explore that. And no one would really let me, pursue it for credit, you know, in courses. You know, there was the old sense that before you dare ever write anything, you better read everything that was ever written. Thank you very much. And I was open to reading, but my God, I needed to practice and be with teachers. And so Doc Palmer, who was the head of the theater department at Cortland State University in the late 60s, he sensed something in me, and there wasn't even really formal independent study. At least at Cortland then, in the state system, New York State system. But he sensed something in me, and he said, look, if you become a theater major, I'll let you write and I'll help you. But here's the catch. You have to begin by writing plays and learning through plays, and then you can write whatever you want. I said, sure. And what happened was an apprenticeship I had never foreseen, which was he made me take every aspect of theater. I did stage set, I did lighting, I did acting, I did directing. And when we took literature in theater courses, so what he did, since there was no independent study, he would give assignments, but he'd take me aside and give me, so when we would study theater, read plays like Ibsen from the 1800s or even all the way back to Sophocles, everybody would have to write a paper. He'd pull me in after and say, okay, you see this? I want you to write a scene based on Sophocles. Do that. I want you to see this character. I want you to write something with a character like that. Write a scene for me. Forget the paper. And so one of the things that was the bones of my writing that's been embedded in me back then because of Doc Palmer and his kindness and his belief is that the two main principles of theater are show, don't tell. We give the evidence, not the conclusions. And the other is that the very nature of theater is that the play is right there between the writer and the viewer. You can't put it behind your back. You can't hide it in symbolism or intellectualism. There's the stage. The writer is back here. There's the stage and there's the audience. So it has to be out front, and you have to show, don't tell. And I think without realizing it, that has informed all of my work. All of, you know, that, and with my just being a lifelong student of metaphor, has informed all of my poetry and all of my books.
Well, that's why in participating with your book, and I'm saying participating.
Oh, wonderful.
That's funny.
Thank you.
That's funny. That word just came to me because it's not about reading them.
Thank
it's
you.
Not a how-to book. It's not going to lay out some map for us about.
I'm glad, yes.
Yeah, it is participating that you, it's like a fine wine that you just savor and you read a story and then you let it work with you.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, it's quite an activity, a mutual activity, actually. And is that what you're intending? Or?
Well, yes. It's intended to be read slowly at the pace of what your heart can take in. And there are often, as you know, there are a lot of invitations then to, because the whole notion about the heart of this book is not just expression to create art, but as you mentioned in the beginning, expression that keeps us alive. Why? Because we're breathing right now. Well, we can't choose to inhale only. It doesn't work that way. And the way the heart breathes, and it's not about creating great art. The heart breathes. The inhalation is how we feel and perceive. And the exhalation is everyone has to enlist and participate in a personal form of expression. in order for the heart to stay healthy and whole and connected. So if I'm true to that, whatever that expression is, well, chances are the trail will be helpful and useful and good and maybe even excellent. But the goal isn't to create an artifice that is beautiful art. The goal is to keep the heart alive by participating in inhaling and perceiving and feeling and expressing. So while this is open to the larger sense of art, which is it could be stamp collecting, it could be listening to stories your grandmother tells you every Sunday when you bring her meals, it could be anything, taking a car apart and putting it back together and then telling somebody about it. Whatever enlists the heart as a form of expression, because what is not expressed is depressed.
So that's why it's really important that we use our originality insofar as our, as you say, there's nothing really original, but the way we view it might be original.
The way we participate, as you said, to participate, to engage, to give ourselves. See, we are the ones. It's interesting, when we're drawn to create something, we're the ones created for the commitment to give our life force to it. We think we're creating something, but it's creating us. And that is the joy and the reward for that. And I learned this, you know, I think I mentioned this in our retreat this week. And I think I mentioned it in the book too. And, you know, watching my father, who was a master woodworker, and as a boy, he would make these hours, weeks, working on these detailed models of ships, sailing ships from the 1800s. He would get plans, purchase like literal blueprints, and then he would make them to scale. And I remember watching him when he didn't know I was watching from the steps of the basement. And what he taught me was not excellence, but immersion. He gave himself so complete. I watched him with hours with tweezers, putting rails together and the bowsprit and, you know, and all the deck. And I watched him, and when he gave himself that completely, I sensed, even as a boy, he was in the moment of everyone who ever built a ship in history. So the reward for immersion is the experience of oneness. Excellence is the byproduct.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that beautiful picture of your father and what you learned. I'm here with Mark Nepo, and he is the author of many books, including one of his books, The Way Under the Way, The Place of True Meeting. Oh, that's a wonderful. I haven't actually read that one yet, but I'm looking forward to that. And then the newest book, Drinking from the River of Light, The Life of Expression. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, marknepo.com. That's N-E-P-O, marknepo.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Mark Nepo. He is the author of Drinking from the River of Light, The Life of Expression. And Mark, we were just talking about immersion, and this reminds me of a story and maybe metaphor.